Hi, and welcome to the Salvation Army Southwest podcast. You'll find engaging messages here, so please go ahead and listen and check out some of our other messages and enjoy what you hear. You can always follow us online on our Facebook page or go to our website to find out more information. Thank you for listening.
Paul, a time when someone has showed you incredible kindness or generosity, especially maybe when you went through a difficult time, someone who went above and beyond what was the expected, somebody who went far greater than you could have ever imagined with their generosity and their kindness. Well, many of you know that Mark and I have two beautiful children, and Rachel and Jacob. But many of you probably are not aware that the road for us to become parents was not really a smooth path. We've actually had two miscarriages before we actually had our first child. And that was a really difficult time for Mark and I. But we were surrounded by loving family and friends that helped us through that dark time. And I remember the kindness of someone after one of the miscarriages that I had, and I think it was the first one. And she was a dear friend that I was teaching at the time, and she was a teacher as well. And she came to check on me after I'd come home from the hospital. And I don't remember the words that she spoke. I don't even remember what I said to her, but I do remember her cleaning my kitchen. Now, my kitchen was dirty, and because I'd been away, I hadn't done these dishes for quite a few days, and I know somebody is cringing because we were just talking about having a clean kitchen earlier, and so my dishes were very smelly at this stage, and this particular friend was known to not even do her own dishes. So for her to come and do my dishes and to clean my kitchen was a really humbling and really generous act. She was known to throw out dirty dishes to avoid doing them and just go and buy some new ones. So for her to come and do my really stinky dishes that were probably food was stuck on like super glue and wipe all my benches down and such, because I was in no state. I did not want to be doing my own dishes. I was feeling quite sorry for myself. So she came in and went above and beyond what friends would normally do. Friends would normally come, maybe bring you some flowers, maybe chat with you. But she came in and did the dirty work. She came in and cleaned my kitchen. And that has stuck with me for quite some time. That was, holy moly, that's 16, 17, 18 years ago that this happened, but it has stuck with me, her incredible generosity and her ability to go above and beyond during a particularly sad time in my life. And today we're going to look at a story of incredible generosity and kindness and going above and beyond when we continue with our Ruth series. And we're going to look at chapter 2 today. So we started looking at Ruth a couple of weeks ago, and we had a bit of a break last week because we had some lovely cadets from Perth come and share with us the meeting. Wasn't that great having them? It was so good. They were. It's probably nice for you guys to hear somebody else's voices other than mine and Mark's. So, but it was great. They were enthusiastic. They fit right in, and I pray that they received a blessing as we received a blessing from them. And so this story of Ruth is someone who went through a really sad time. It was three women, in fact, that had gone through a really difficult time in their life of loss. So we have Naomi, we have Ruth and Orpah. Not Oprah, as Mark was trying to confuse you all. It's Orpah. And so we see that they have experience loss. They have lost their husbands. And so Naomi lost her husband, who's the father to two sons. And those sons, Mahlon and Chilion, both die as well. And so Ruth and Orpah are without their husbands as well. And then we see the last time we picked up was the story was that Naomi was wanting to return to her homeland of Bethlehem and to go back to her family and her family home. And we see Ruth and Orpah making the decision whether to stay or whether to go back to their home of Moab. And Ruth decides to stay with Naomi. Orpah goes back to Moab, but Ruth decides to stay with her. And we read in chapter 1 and verse 16, and I think it might even come up on the screen, where Ruth is saying to Naomi, she says, "Where you go, I'll go. Where you stay, I'll stay. And your people will be my people and your God, my God." So Ruth is making a huge commitment, not just to Naomi, but to her God and to her people, and to say that she will stay with her. So chapter 2 continues this story of Ruth and Naomi after they have returned back to Bethlehem, and the extraordinary generosity and kindness that is shown to them through a man called Boaz. So at the beginning of Ruth chapter 2, we're introduced to this character of Boaz, and he's described as a man of standing. He was probably someone with good character, someone who was known to be of influence in his community. And he's mentioned as being a relative of Naomi's late husband, Elimelech. Now, the translation of this part in the early part of chapter 2 implies that there's a loose connection between Boaz and Elimelech. And it's even debated whether it's just an acquaintance or a friend or someone that Elimelech maybe just knew. But later in the passage, we see that this connection is actually a bit more than just this loose connection. So we know that Ruth and Naomi have arrived back in Bethlehem. And the last time that Mark spoke, he was sharing with us how Naomi had come back to Bethlehem and she was venting about her experiences. She was pouring her heart out and saying how bitter she was. And she actually renames herself Mara, which means bitter. She'd felt like all hope had gone. And her life, and she felt that she was in such a hopeless space that she did not even feel that she could even keep her original name. So we have these two women, Naomi and Ruth, who are left to fend for themselves. All their sense of provision with their husbands has been taken from them, and they have lost that. And Naomi, obviously being an older woman than Ruth, is probably not even able to provide for herself. So the fact that Ruth has come with her is a blessing to Naomi, but she hasn't quite seen that yet. She's still in this space of sadness and bitterness. But Ruth volunteers to go out to the fields to pick up leftover grain for her and her mother-in-law. And we see this in verse 3, that we are introduced to this word glean. And it says, "So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters." So this word glean, I don't know if you've ever used this in context. Has anyone used the word glean before? No, a few blank looks. The word glean is probably not really a principle or a practice or a word that we've used today, but it was a principle instituted way back in the Old Testament by God for his people to implement in their farming and their agricultural businesses and in their farms to allow for people that were in need. And so it's written about in Leviticus, in Deuteronomy, and in Exodus, some of the earlier books of the Old Testament. And I want to read to you from Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. And it says, "When you reap the harvest of your land," so everyone knows what a harvest is, when you collect all the crops and the grain. It says, "Do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God." So we see similar passages describing this principle in Leviticus 23:22. That pretty much repeats the same sort of theme as the first passage, and in Deuteronomy 24, verses 19 to 20. And it says to leave whatever remains from the harvest. And Deuteronomy picks up this idea of the foreigner as well as those that are fatherless, so the orphans and those that are widowed. So it's for a great number of people that may be in need, is this idea of leaving grain for them. So their gleaning is basically picking up the leftovers or taking out the outskirts of the harvest that have been left by the farmers. He also reminds them that they once were slaves and that God has provided for them, so they are to do the same in providing for others in need. Exodus, or the passage in Exodus 23, verse 10 to 11, talks about the Sabbath year, that, you know, you plough your and you work the land for 6 years, but on the seventh year you are to let it rest, which is a Sabbath. So Sabbath meaning rest, or seventh year as well. And the idea is that whatever comes up on that plot can be left for those that are in need. They can come and onto that seventh Sabbath year plot, and they can take whatever they whatever is growing on that plot. So often it will be something that's left over from previous years, but they have that the entitlement and the privilege of being able to come and take whatever is from that land. So basically, this system of gleaning is God's welfare system that he has put in place for an agricultural time. And so farmers were instructed to leave the very edge of their harvest, not collect it in their bundles that they would be collecting from their harvest, but to leave it for those that were in need. So whether that would be foreigners that had no source of income, whether that was widows, whether that was orphans, maybe those that were in debt, they would be able to come and take the leftovers from the edge of the harvest. So this is what Ruth is doing. Ruth is going, because she's a widow and her mother-in-law is a widow, they have this entitlement to be able to go and glean and take these extra leftover parts of the harvest. So in verse 3, we see that she has somehow managed to get to a particular field by a particular person. And it says, as it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. So of all the farms and all the fields that Ruth could have gone to, she just happened to choose the one that there's a possible family member at. I don't think that's coincidence, do you? I think it's probably a bit more God-incidence. I think God had probably orchestrated that. And in verse 4, we finally see the entrance of this man, Boaz. And he has just arrived back from the city of Bethlehem. And the first words that he speaks are words of blessing to his workers. That suggests something of his character, doesn't it? That the very first words out of his mouth are to his workers, and that they are words of blessing. It says, "The Lord be with you." And they replied to him, "The Lord bless you." So it suggests how he's a respected man. There's some mutual respect here. I think he would be a great boss to work for. He pours out blessing and they reciprocate. They give it back to him. It speaks volumes of how he is as a man and also as their boss. And then Boaz asks about this woman that is at the farm. And he asks his foreman, and the foreman tells his boss that she is Ruth the Moabite, or Moabitess, who has come to town with her mother-in-law, Naomi. The foreman explains to his boss that Ruth has asked for permission to glean and to gather in the fields, and how she has been working hard since that very morning. So this speaks volumes about Ruth's character. She's polite. She asks permission to be able to take the gleanings or to take provision from the land. And she's working hard. So she's polite and she's hard working. She'd been there since that morning. And it says that she'd only had a small break. So throughout this passage, we see Ruth being referred to as the Moabite or the Moabitess. And that highlights the fact that she's a foreigner. She's not from Bethlehem. She's not an Israelite. She's from another land. She's in some translations, it would refer to her as an alien, not the doody-doody sort of alien that comes from outer space. Alien meaning not from this land. And so we see Boaz address her in a different way, in a more personal and maybe even affectionate way. In verse 8, he refers to her as my daughter, which implies a more personal connection rather than highlighting her outsidedness as being a foreigner. And Boaz urges her not to go and work in any other field, but to stay on his property and to work with his servant girls. He offers her protection and he instructs his men or his workers not to touch her. I find this slightly odd that he has to actually tell them not to do this. And later on, Naomi confirms that don't go to another farm because it may put your safety in jeopardy. This was obviously something that was of concern for maybe foreign women that were not treated well. Maybe they were harassed. Maybe they were exploited. But he provides a safe environment for Ruth. He offers her provision by access to the water that even the servants and his workers could get. He even invites her to eat lunch with him. That would not be something that would happen for foreign women. They would not be invited into the table to eat lunch with them. And Ruth responds with such humility and graciousness and questions him. And in verse 10, we see her saying, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" So she even says, "I'm a foreigner. Why are you being so kind to me?" But I don't think Boaz sees her as a foreigner. He sees her as someone worthy of care and provision. And Boaz then says to Ruth that he's heard about all her circumstances. He's heard about the fact that she's lost her husband and that she's come with Naomi, who's also lost her husband, and that she's chosen to look after and accompany Naomi. And he prays over her. What a gracious man to pray over someone who would be considered an outsider. And Boaz in verse 12 says, "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." I think Boaz probably didn't even realize that he would actually be the fulfillment of that prayer. But I don't want to give away too much of next week's sermon, because Mark will probably bring that out in his prayer. In his sermon, Ruth then responds again with gratitude towards Boaz, and he continues to show her even more care. So she's invited in to have lunch with him and his workers. She eats enough and even has leftovers to take back to her mother-in-law. Boaz then instructs his workers to give her extra stalks from their bundles. So not just the leftovers on the floor that they haven't picked up, the actual good, the good harvest, the best parts. He says, take them out of there and give them to Ruth as well. So Ruth is able to take home a huge bundle of grain. And it's mentioned that she has an ephah, I think is how you pronounce it. That's the amount that she has, which is probably equivalent to 13 kilos. That would be a decent bundle to carry home. I struggle with a 4-kilo bag of potatoes from the shop and I have to take it from my car into the house, and it's not very far. So this would be the equivalent of more than 3 bags of 4-kilo potatoes. And she would have had to probably go on a bit longer than my driveway to my house to get it back to Naomi. Amazing amount of grain. More than she would have probably ever asked or imagined. Isn't that what God tells us? He gives us more than we can ever ask or imagine. God is a God of abundance, is he not? So Boaz went above and beyond the requirements of what the gleaning law said. The gleaning law said that Ruth was able to come in and grab some leftovers enough for to take home. He gave out of the abundance. He gave out of his best. He gave her protection. He gave her ability to be treated as an equal by coming in to eat with him. He provided water that was for his workers, but an outsider was allowed to. He gave her more than what she was definitely the minimal provision. He gave out of his goodness. He gave out of his kindness. And he didn't even refer to her as an outsider. He claimed her as his daughter. So Boaz's character, he is generous, he is kind, and he's above reproach. He is different to the people at that time, and Mark alluded to it when he spoke about the book of Ruth being written in the time of Judges, which was a time where people did what was right in their own eyes. They were corrupt, they were greedy, they were selfish. They did what was best for them. But Boaz is showing a different type of way. He's showing the godly way of thinking of others, not just of himself. He didn't just give his leftovers, he gave of his best grain. Is our giving to others about minimal provision? Or do we give abundantly? Do we just give the leftover tin of beans at the back of our cupboard, or the little change that we might have in our purse? Or do we intentionally give of our best? It's easy to donate secondhand goods that we no longer need or want. But what about intentionally giving something new to somebody in need? Part of the reason we have set up a community garden in our back plot, so those of you that from the car park, you could probably see through the fence. We've got some veggie bins. And where's Ellen? Ellen. Ellen's our chief gardener, and she's helped us get it up and running. And the idea of having that was to provide fresh, really nutritious food to support our Doorways program and to provide for people in need. Not just we get leftovers from our second bite program that, you know, the lettuce is a bit weary and a bit brown looking. We get, you know, beans that look a bit shriveled, you know, a punnet of strawberries that might have some less desirables in there that we have to fish out. But we wanted to provide dignity. We wanted to provide the best. And so that's why part of the philosophy of having the garden is that we can provide the best, not just the leftovers. And this week being Anti-Poverty Week that we've just had, I think we can see the purpose of why God instituted gleaning as a way of empowering people. It was not just about providing them with food. It was providing them with an opportunity to work to get the food, which provides dignity. They still had to come onto the farms to gather the grain. And I think what today, how do we impose this idea of what God has set up long ago for people today? How do we empower people by able to provide for themselves, but we are the generous ones in allowing them to come and gather? Boaz didn't treat Ruth as an outsider. He allowed her to come in. Are we allowing outsiders? Do we treat them as just as worthy as people that are our best friends? Do we treat them with suspicion? Because Moabites were treated with suspicion at that time, and they didn't have a good reputation. And Mark alluded to that in his sermon, that they had some interesting practices that were probably not of godly practices. And so, you know, it was kind of like, oh, stay away from them. They, you know, they do some weird and wonderful things. But are we treating people with suspicion? Who are the outsiders that we, you know, that have bad reputations that we kind of distance ourselves from? Are we reluctant to share our life with people that may be outside and different from us? Who are the people that have bad reputations today that we can extend grace and kindness to, just like Boaz did for Ruth? And when Ruth returned home to her mother-in-law with this big, huge bundle of 13 kilos of grain, her mother-in-law is like flabbergasted. What? Where did you get this from? Who have you been working for? And when Ruth reveals to Naomi that it is a man called Boaz, I can almost see the gleam of hope in Naomi's eyes, who'd been a woman who'd named herself bitter because of that's how she was feeling. I can see the gleam of hope in her eyes. And in verse 20, she says, "The Lord bless him. He has not stopped showing kindness to the living and the dead. That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen or family redeemers or guardian redeemers." At the beginning of chapter 2, we hear that Boaz is that relative, maybe a loose connection to Elimelech. But here we see he is a bit more than that. He is a close relative. And he's described as a kinsman redeemer or a guardian redeemer or a family redeemer. What is this redeemer? What does it mean? Well, kinsman, guardian, family, that's what it means, family, close relative, kin, usually means family, so kinsman means somebody from our family. And it means that there's a close relative that has responsibilities and obligations. It's not just some distant cousin that you say hello to at Christmas and you don't see them the rest of the year. This is someone who has obligations to you, towards your family, and can enact this law of redemption. The law of redemption meant that the nearest male relative had the duty of preserving the family name and property, particularly in cases where they might have needed to avenge the death of a family member. Maybe they needed help to buy back family property that had been sold to pay debts. Maybe it was to buy back a relative who had sold themselves into slavery to pay those debts. And also, they may have needed to marry the widow of a deceased relative. And we see this come into play because Ruth is the widow of a deceased relative. So the root word here is goel, I think that's how I pronounce it, which means to recover, rescue, ransom, buy back, or redeem what has been lost. And Naomi and Ruth had lost so much. They'd lost family. They'd lost husbands. They'd lost the possibility of children, the hope of a future. But Boaz, being this kinsman redeemer or family redeemer, presented hope that they may be able to gain some of that back. The very mention of Boaz puts a gleam of hope into Naomi, a woman who has all hope gone, but hope is possibly being restored. God has shown his provision and that he hasn't forgotten her. He hasn't forgotten Naomi. He hasn't forgotten Ruth. God is showing that he is faithful. He is a provider. He is caring and loving and loyal. What have you lost in your life? Where do you need to know that God's love is faithful, that he is caring and that he is loyal to you? What hope do you have that God will restore, rescue, and get back for you what you have lost? just as Boaz is that kinsman redeemer for Ruth and Naomi, that hope of restoring to them, Jesus is our redeemer. He is our hope of getting back what we have lost. He has rescued us from sin and from death. He is restoring us into the image of what God has created us in. He's the hope of restoring what has been lost for us. And this next song is called Loyal. And it speaks of God's love that he has for us. It talks of how God will never let us go. We are safe forever in his arms. And he will never change. God never left Ruth and Naomi. He ensured their safety and did that through Boaz. He uses people to extend his kindness and his love to us. And God provided for them even when it seemed all hope had gone. God's love towards us is loyal and faithful and unending. It's the only thing that we can rely upon forever.